Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me always, Blake Harrison. How are you?
Very good, mate. Very good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. First record in 3 weeks?
Yeah.
When was the last time we recorded? Stevie Ray, wasn't it?
Yes, that was a while ago. I mean, I think what we'll be a bit cheeky, and we're going to do a double record today. So you're going to actually listen to us speak on a previous episode after we've recorded this, but it's going to go out before. So there's no point us really discussing what's been going on with us because we'll do that in the next episode and you'll be caught
That's
up.
A really good point.
So before we back ourselves into a weird corner or make you listen to the same episode effectively twice, let's talk about who we've got on today. So we've got a super interesting guest on today, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think this is going to be a really fascinating episode because we're going to try and sort of do the whole career spanning thing, but there's been a huge gap in that career. Before we actually say who the guest is, just big shout out to friend of the show, Brian Lacey, who put together this and introduced us to today's guest, who is, former UFC fighter, maybe current UFC fighter. We don't know. We'll find out.
We're going to find out. We're finding out
absolutely.
What's going on.
But he's been away for a long, long time due to a horrendous illness, which I'm sure we're going to find out about that and how that sort of took its toll on today's guest, who is John Hathaway.
I have to just say, I love how we're always like, before we announce who it is, it's like, they have seen it. Like, they've clicked on the button.
They've clicked the button, haven't they?
They've read the name. Before,
I like the mystery.
I like the mystery, but there's actually, the reality is there's no mystery because they've clicked the name or they've seen us promote it on like social medias and all that kind of stuff. So before like you hear us say the name for the first time, that's like what it really is. That's the big announcement.
Maybe on all the artwork now, we should just literally just put, we're not saying who it is yet.
All right.
And like, just the only way you find out who it is when you press play.
Yeah, like the masked magician. We'll put like a mask over the fighters. I saw something that I think it was BT Sport did on their social medias recently, like guess the fighters by the tattoos, which was fun.
Ooh,
and so like we could just do that. We could just put up like a tattoo and be like, oh, this is the guest this week. Can you guess who it is?
Definitely. That's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, Connor's instantly recognizable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I'm now just thinking of really kind of iconic
Well, Max Holloway and Tony Ferguson's backs, I think, would have slight, because they've both got the wings, haven't they?
Yeah.
So they'd be like, oh, which one of them is it?
Yeah. I imagine Platinum Mike Perry's just got a load of ones he's done himself.
Yeah. We are super digressive. We have got British MMA fighter that, you know, he was such a highly touted prospect, John Hathaway, back in the day. His record is 17-2, but as you said, he hasn't fought for 8 years because of an illness, but he's coming back and he's fighting in Octagon MMA. When this goes out, it's probably in a few days, probably. On the 15th of October in Frankfurt. And there's, some weird situation where he's sort of still a UFC fighter, but they've loaned him out to Octagon or something just to kind of get his feet back. And we're going to all see what happens. And we're going to find out from John himself exactly what's going on with that deal, how it's been being away. I mean, this guy was touted as an amazing British MMA prospect. He was up there with the Dan Hardys and the Michael Bispings of the world. And sadly for him, things didn't work out. But, you know, now at the age of, I think he's about 35 now, he's making a return. He's coming back. So this is going to be a fascinating episode for you to listen to and get into the mindset of someone that's been through something, you know, quite frankly, traumatic. And you know, his whole life was turned upside down by this illness. But hopefully it's back on track now. Is there anything more to say before this chat?
I think all that's left to say is please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful John Hathaway.
John Hathaway, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you, mate?
Very well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me on.
Absolute pleasure, absolute pleasure. Well, there's so much to talk about, and obviously during this chat we're going to ask where the bloody hell you've been. But we always like to sort of start these conversations right back where it started. So we want to ask you, John, like how you found yourself getting involved in the world of mixed martial arts and where the story began.
I guess for me, again, I was kind of, I guess, an avid competitor growing up. I always played rugby. I had like two older brothers. So I was kind of, I guess, used to a bit of a rough and tumble, so to say. But for me, I remember just watching one of the, I think it was like a UFC Unleashed on a Sky Sports program one night and just kind of fell in love with it from there. And I think I must have been about 14, 15 at that point. Obviously, it was a nightmare to kind of, it wasn't like the internet wasn't the same as what it is nowadays. You couldn't really watch any of it. So, I mean, I remember picking up some VHSs and some, I think some DVDs at that point that probably started coming in a bit more of like the old UFCs, and I guess starting from the beginning of it, watching, you know, Dan Severn and Royce Gracie and Ken Shamrock and stuff.
Where did you grow up, John?
I always grew up down Brighton Hove Way. So I was always a kind of southern boy.
I always tend to ask a lot of people, like, is that a place where you dealt with a lot of like confrontation growing up? But in my head, maybe I'm wrong, I don't imagine Brighton being. I imagine Brighton being quite a lovely place. Like, me and my wife travel down to Brighton every now and again. I mean, I know times change. Like, I grew up in Peckham, which was a rough place to grow up. But now everyone's moving to Peckham. Everyone seems to think Peckham's like the cool hotspot in London. So things change. How was Brighton growing up for you 20 years ago or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely fine. I said I generally avoided any confrontation stuff. They always had, like, I guess in any area, you know, some are obviously more rough than others, but you always had some bad guys, but just generally I didn't hang out with them. Wasn't really involved with the kind of bad crowd or anything like that. So, I mean, I've never had any fights outside competition, really.
And what did you start with in terms of your martial arts journey? Where did you go? Was it kickboxing? Was it jiu-jitsu? What was the first martial art you took up?
I mean, I guess I started all by myself. I think I picked up, was it probably like a local black belt magazine from like some kung fu shop, ordered some VHSs again. I ordered Bass Rutten's like Extreme Pancrase, and I ordered Mark Kerr's Wrestling for Valley to Do, and then just started watching that, wrestling with my friends, wrestling with my brothers. Obviously, we had stops and starts with that, like where we got all the pads. Didn't get groin guards, started sparring, everything was going fine. Obviously, someone gets dropped with a kick to the groin. Obviously, sparring gets, you know, called off like a month until we can get some money, get some groin guards, and then started back up again. But I mean, yeah, it was just, there wasn't really places.
I was going to say, John, is this all happening in like your parents' front room?
Pretty much, like in the front room or in the garden or something like that. I mean, I was doing it at school. I was kind of getting all my friends involved, really. I mean, I had a bunch of rugby friends, so I mean, they were all fine and up for it. You know, I can tell you, every one of my rugby friends, I mean, obviously there's over 15 of them in a team, every one of them wrestled, knew how to do like a basic Kimura, armbar, triangle. Everyone had to, basically. Otherwise, they were just going to get wrestled at some point by me. And, you know, they needed to know something out of this. Otherwise, it's just going to be a bad day for them, really.
That's amazing. That's a different time, isn't it? Like where we are now, all the fighters that are like, you know, under 30 and all that kind of stuff, they're all coming up and they're doing martial arts, if not MMA classes. Right. You know, that's where it is. It begins now with MMA, doesn't it? You were just ordering videos. You didn't have a class. You were just doing it in your front room with your mates. It's a different time.
There wasn't really classes. It was crazy. I remember actually in like, I guess my last year of school, obviously we had internet in our IT classes. And I'll just try to spend time like looking up techniques on like BJJ.org. But like, there wasn't any videos or anything. It's not like YouTube is nowadays. You can look at any technique you want to nowadays. But when I was looking at like still frame pictures, and I remember always want to remind me, because it's how I learned a clock choke, was is the Walid Ismail versus Royce Gracie match. And after that happened, they did like a breakdown on it. And it was just like trying to load up, took forever. Obviously, it took like basically the whole class just to read and look at these pictures for one technique, you know? Like obviously during, this is during trying to actually get, you know, the teacher to maybe do work as well. So, but yeah, just having a page up and just trying to read stuff and learn about it.
So the point where like your parents must have been like, seriously, John, like you've got to stop fighting with your brothers in the front room. When did it evolve into finding a gym? And what was that first discipline you joined a gym to pursue?
So for me, I think we were about, I'd say about 17, and we started going over to a Sol Gilbert CT fight school. So Sol was a local fighter who trained up at London Shoot Fighters, is how I kind of got my connection with Shoot Fighters. And he was down from the Brighton area, and he had a gym in like Peacehaven way. So we used to get out to him basically and start training him. And again, it was fully trained under, I guess, mixed martial arts. Obviously, Jack McGee run the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu down there, and kind of there's some other individual ones. But pretty much, again, I tackled it. I was probably one of the first generations to tackle MMA as like a whole thing rather than coming from a discipline of another discipline, basically.
I mean, all disciplines are obviously ridiculously difficult to you know, to excel, and certainly to reach the level that you reached. How easy did it come to you? You know, you said you competed at a rugby to a decent level. Like moving into mixed martial arts, did you feel instantly comfortable with it, and did it come relatively comfortably to you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess probably the one that took the longest to kind of get comfortable with was the stand-up. I was always fine with the grappling and the ground and pound side, or the actual kind of like the takedown wrestling side. But just getting used to, I guess, getting hit in the range of stand-up took a little while. But I said it was something I knew I wanted to do so much that I wasn't going to let that stop or slow me, if that makes sense.
You had a successful run in like Cage Rage. This is how far back we're going now. So like not Cage Warriors, Cage Rage.
I was in the early days of stuff. So
that's it. Yeah, it was the early days. And then you ended up getting into UFC. I think it was 2009 you made your debut. You made your debut in 2000. That's, you know, 12 years ago you made your debut in the UFC. You must have seen some huge changes, both with the sport of MMA, the UFC in particular, obviously the UK MMA scene. What's the things that have really stood out to you over the course of like 12 years of from that debut to this point now? What's the things that have really leapt out to you as like huge changes you've seen in the mixed martial arts world?
Well, I guess, you know, the general level of just everyone's mixed martial arts has gone up. But what you find is that, I mean, the biggest difference is, I remember UFC cards, like when I first started, I guess, competing on UFC or even before that, I remember, you know, once a month you'd have a UFC card. It'd be one of them things, or maybe not even once a month, maybe even longer than that. You'd get all your friends around, you'd stay up. It'd be that kind of like big event rather than now they're on every week. It's so hard. Like everyone pretty much I know watches them on a Sunday. Do you know what I mean? Sunday morning, they get up, they find somewhere to watch and stuff because it's just too much rather than like, it's not that it's lost the special occasion because they just have so many more fighters they need to put out. And it's the best thing about it. It's not just UFC. There's so many good shows and organizations, whether they're UK-based. Obviously, Octagon being a European-based one is massive. Like KSW, there's so many good, big organizations around putting out amazing fight cards almost every week. I imagine there's one on every week. Yeah. You know, I mean, somewhere in the world, which is like a high-level thing.
Yeah. And multiple organizations, as well as you're saying, you've got Bellator, PFL, UFC, Cage Warriors. There's so much going on. It's hard to keep up with it all, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, so it was that weird thing of like, I guess when I started, you'd never almost be able to do this now. You'd know a couple of fighters, but I remember probably when I started in UFC or before, I almost knew like every UFC fighter. But again, they've added like two new weight classes. I think they only had lightweight to heavyweight at that point. Each division didn't have like hundreds of people. They probably had like 30 people in each one. Do you know what I mean? So you almost knew like every fighter. Yeah. But now, yeah, it's just a plethora of people in every division.
We like to sort of dig into the sort of mental aspect of the fight game on this podcast, which we'll do throughout this episode. But just going back to, not necessarily even your UFC debut, your first fight. And tell me what was going on in your head before you made that walk to the octagon.
I mean, probably not much. I just kind of go over the stuff that I need to do, and I go. I guess I always have like one last thought before I walk out. So that basically I always have this thing of like, all right, so I've made it. It's basically happening. Because there's always that thing of like, you know, in the weeks building up to it, you could trip over something, you could injure yourself, you could do anything that will somehow stop you from fighting. So you always have that last thought before you walk out there. It's like, okay, this is actually happening. You just got to go out there and do what you do.
You were 14-0 when you ended up. I mean, you got into the UFC, and I think you're on a 4-fight win streak, and you beat people like Diego Sanchez. You beat Rick Story, like the guys that were top names at the time. I mean, young fans of the sport coming in now won't look at necessarily Diego Sanchez in the way you would look at him if you saw him fighting back when were fighting him. You know. It was a very, very different kettle of fish. To have wins over Rick Story and Diego Sanchez, that was a big deal back then. And you were on a 4-fight win streak, and then you fought Mike Pyle and had your first loss. How difficult was that to overcome that? Because I think on this show, I always like to kind of hear fighters talking about the methods that they use to kind of overcome difficult times or overcome adversity. Because I think listeners can hopefully try and apply certain things to their own lives. And how difficult was it for you? Because you must have felt invincible. You're 14-0. You've had a 4-fight win streak in the UFC. And then you have to suffer defeat for the first time. Was that a difficult pill to swallow? And how did you overcome it? If it was, maybe it wasn't difficult for you.
I guess, I mean, during it, obviously, it was darn difficult. Because it was like one of the nights where, like, it was almost that nightmare night where, like, I was almost just a step behind for every round. It was 3 rounds of just getting beat up. And you're just like, wow, this is just can't seem to go right, basically. And I mean, after you're just kind of like, okay, like that happened. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. Kind of it's happened. Yeah. So you just got to kind of get back in, start getting back into the routine of everything and then get back out and try to perform.
So you found it quite easy to kind of like compartmentalize it slightly and just kind of go, that's just something that's happened. We now move on to the next one. Yeah. That was a blip. Yeah,
pretty much. It's like, yeah, just right, cool. I mean, super annoying. I wish it never happened, but it happens. And you just got to kind of carry on, really.
I'm really interested in what you said there when you said, like, you know, you felt like a kind of step behind what was going on, and you know, you realised at this point that, you know, you're probably not going to get the W in this fight. Like, what is the kind of thought process like when that sort of negativity kicks in of like, oh shit, this isn't going very well? Where do you go with your mindset there? Do you just look to your coaches for advice? Like, what's the kind of process if you, like, for instance, I don't know, 2 rounds down and it's like, right, you've probably got to get the sort of stoppage to get the win. Like, what's going on in your head, and how much of what your coaches are saying to you in the corner at that point will actually manifest itself?
I mean, ideally, you'd love everything to manifest what the coaches say, because then you would have already got the win. You're like, yeah, all right, I'm 2 rounds down. I was like, you know, they tell you, you know, we need to do this, need to do this, change this up. And you're like, okay, all you can think of is, I will try to do that the best I can, you know?
Yeah.
And ideally, you know, I'd get the finish and we'd kind of, it'd be over. Yeah, I mean, I guess to a certain extent, you can look at the Leon Edwards latest fight. Because it does happen.
Absolutely.
You know, it does happen. And rest of, like, I'm super happy for him. He won the first round, obviously lost up until that last round. You know, it was kind of almost, most people would probably say it was in the bag at that point, but yeah. You know, you can still pull out. So yeah, you just keep trying to basically do what either your coach has asked for or what you've been training to do.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. So after the Mike Pyle fight, you go on another 3-fight win streak in the UFC. Everything feels like it's going really well. You then unfortunately lose to Dong Hyun Kim. But that was back in 2014. And you haven't had a fight since. Now, we know what... But Stu and I have obviously done a little bit of research. We know a little bit what's going on. But for all the listeners out there that aren't familiar with the John Hathaway story and what went on, can you now kind of explain to them, to us, what's happened so that you've been out of the cage for 8 years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, basically, I'd already had before the Kim fight. I think it was after the Pyle fight I got it. But I basically got ulcerous colitis, which is basically a kind of form of Crohn's in the large bowel. And I'd had to pull out, I want to say by the end, before I kind of, I guess, not retired, but stopped competing, I think I pulled out of 3 fights. And it just kind of rankled me a bit, having to do that. And I mean, even with the Kim fight, I was kind of, I had to go on the prednisone, which is the medication to kind of like stop flare-ups before it. But I mean, it just was annoying me to have to pull out of third fight. I think it was, I would say Matt Brown was the first one, which was really annoying because that would have been a great match as well. And he's like kind of one of the old hands and would have been great to compete against him. Obviously the last one was Gunnar Nelson as well. And again, would have been great competitions. And the worst thing about it was, I think most times, you know, kind of a flare-up kind of comes when you're, or he's under a lot of stress, and it'd be in those last couple of weeks. And it was just a terrible thing to have to pull out on someone because he's been training just as hard as me with like 2 weeks left, 3 weeks left. I mean, maybe what? They'll find a replacement, but maybe they won't, you know?
So it kind what of was does just a flare up entail, John? Sorry, what, is, like, what are the symptoms of you say it's not Crohn's, it's ulcerative colitis.
But again, the things will be very similar on the symptoms. It would obviously be a large amount of abdominal pain, discomfort, fatigue, and just basically feeling really run down and rough because you're fighting something internally, basically, which obviously kind of goes completely against trying to fight and train to a hard degree, you know, especially as well when you're coming into those last weeks where you almost need as much as you want. You'll never be perfect for a match, but you want most things to go as perfect as they kind of can in those last couple of weeks.
And I mean, how was that with dealing with things like weight cutting? Was that extra difficult for weight cuts? Because again, you're talking about being fatigued. Well, whenever you're cutting weight, you're going to be fatiguing already. You're going to be dehydrating yourself. How was it dealing with flare-ups, as you call it then?
I guess to a certain extent, this is like I say, silver lining for it. It's almost the opposite, where it would help me lose loads of weight just because everything would just pass straight through me and not hold in. So like, it's almost the worst thing that I was like overcut even weeks building out just because my body wouldn't hold on to anything. It would just be kind of, I guess, burning so many calories, just fighting off infections internally. And so I mean, I was light, which is always good. I mean, to be fair, it's incredibly impressive because I remember, I think it's before the Matt Brown one. I mean, I was running some of my best times. I was light. I was fit because I was in towards the end of a camp, you know, so I was doing some of my kind of best 2 mile runs and stuff like that. Some good fitness things. So it's amazing what your body can kind of continue to do, you know?
Yeah.
Was there a kind of point, sort of psychologically, when you just thought, right, look, something's definitely not right here and it's going to impact at some point soon on my career? Like, when did that kind of really present itself to you, John?
I guess when I pulled out the Gunner one, just because, again, it had been, I don't know how many flare-ups I'd had at that point, but I pulled out 3 fights. Do you know what I mean? It was like, okay, like, I'll take some time off after this and, like, just try to kind of go through and almost fix it. Do you know what I mean? It's that hard thing with fixing it. But I said, I went for a couple of different diets to start with, then medications, because the next set of medications up from what I was on was basically immune suppressants. And the thought of going on like immune suppressants always kind of really rankled with me. Or didn't particularly want to do it because it seemed counterintuitive to what I should be doing with my body, basically.
Yeah.
But again, everything kind of takes ages to kind of like settle into. You're like, oh, you know, you're trying to diet, whether it would, you know, a FODMAP diet, so low information diet and you try it, but then you try it for, say, 3 months, you're like, oh, it seems to be working, not had a flare-up, everything's good. And then 4 months in, you'll have a flare-up. 6 months in, you'll have a flare-up. So you're like, okay, so that doesn't work. Then you'll try another type of diet. That wouldn't work. And then, say, I moved on to the immune suppressants. And I think I went through, I want to say, probably about 4 or 5 different versions of it. But I said each one's like, takes about 3 to 6 months, where you start taking it, you go in like every other week, have bloods done, see how the kind of body's reacting to them. I remember one of them just made me violently sick, so I got to stop that one immediately. One, basically, my body was changing into something different, so I had to take more medication to stop it changing into something different so my body could actually use what it's meant to be using to kind of suppress my immune system.
Wow. So what was the moment that, because I know that you've, am I right in saying you ended up having 3 surgeries?
Yeah.
Overall to deal with this? But you were at one point maybe adamant you didn't want to have the surgery. So what was the turning point there?
I was, before going for this, I was adamant that I wasn't going to take immune suppressants. So once I'd kind of tackled that hurdle, yeah. I was like, oh, okay, you know, we'll just crack on with that. And then I went into like biologicals, which were actually pretty good. They're almost like, they work a little bit like an immune suppressant, but not in the same way, nor as I guess invasive on the body. But you'd have like an IV for like an hour, then wait an hour and then go. And they would make me feel great for, say, I think I'd have them every 8 weeks, and I'd feel great for like the first 6 to 7 weeks. And then the last week I'd start feeling a bit like run down and a bit crummy again. Yeah. And that kind of kept me all right for a little while. And then again, I had a flare up during being, should be in like a good period of them. Yeah. But I mean, for the surgery point, I mean, I was in that hospital for like the last year before, probably the last like 6 to 8 months. I was in that hospital like every other week, really.
God.
I mean, it was right.
Was that pre-surgery or was that during the surgery?
That was pre-surgery, yeah, pre-surgery.
Pre-surgery. And that was just because the flare-ups were so bad and so often that you just had to keep going to the hospital.
Yeah, so basically you'd go on a prednisone, which is like the immune suppressant, or like the anti-inflammatory kind of steroid that helps control it. And normally, say, they'd give you 8 pills and every week you'd drop it down by 1 pill. But the problem is when I'd get to like 7 pills, I'd flare up again. So then I'd go back into the hospital. I'd go on like IVs for like 5 days. Then they'd let me back out and I'd go back on the oral pills. Then 2 weeks into the oral pills, I'd flare back up again. So I'd come back in. So I basically spent, I think, the last 8 months before the surgeries on like prednisone, which is like, it's quite a rough kind of thing. Again, it kind of helps. It doesn't help anything, really. It doesn't make your body feel great.
And during all of this time, what's the relationship been between yourself and the UFC?
Again, when I kind of like took the step back, they just kind of was like, cool, just let us know when you want back in and we'll kind of go from there. So they've just been quite hands off with me, quite nice to just letting it go. Obviously, I've been drug tested all throughout it, so which I was happy to do. So yeah, I've been quite good.
So you USADA are still testing you regular?
Yeah.
And have done throughout?
Yeah, at least 3 to 4 times a year I get tested.
Wow.
How that must have been difficult if you were like, guys, I'm in the hospital. You've got to come here and do my like, there's loads of urine samples, guys. You just pop to the hospital and grab one. Like, how that must have been. Was that not an extra burden to have to notify USADA of your whereabouts all the time? I mean, granted, you were probably just at home at the hospital anyway. Yeah,
they never clocked me, I guess, when I was in the hospital. But again, when I was back, they clocked me. It's like, I guess the annoying thing about it was remembering all the medications I was on throughout, like when I was doing the immune suppressant and everything else. So, okay.
Of course, you got to label that and send that off, say, I'm on all this.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Because they say, like, prednisone's a funny one with the normal steroid what you're in when you're in a flare-up. So it wasn't necessarily all the weird name stuff on the immune suppressants and the biologicals, which I'd have to kind of make sure I had written down on my phone somewhere. But the prednisone, funnily enough, is fine out of competition, but it's a legal substance in competition. So it's like one of the ones where, like, I mean, I always put it down, being like, oh, I'm on prednisone at the moment, or these last couple of months I'm on prednisone. So I'd always just kind of like, after the first couple of times, where it'd be like a bit of a ball, like Googling all this stuff and what I'm on, I was like, right, I'll just have it written down on my phone. Just so when they come in, I'm like, cool, this is what I'm on, write it down. I said they were always again, it's like an external company that does the USADA testing over in this country, but they were always lovely guys.
Yeah.
So.
And just sort of, you know, 2, 3, 4 years into this, what kept you so positive and you know, did it always present himself to you, the eventuality of this would be, I'll be back in the octagon and I will be competing?
Yeah, I mean, I always had that view. Obviously, I've got a good wife, good family, good friends around me. I've had a little one now who's 3 and a half, so she's actually going to come around since the surgeries. Mm. But I mean, yeah, I always kind of had it in mind that I was going to compete again. Ideally, it would have taken a lot less longer, but it took a long time, so...
And was you? I take it you was in and out of shoot fighters throughout this yeah. You know, sporadically.
Whenever I could kind of get up, I'd kind of get up. Like, again, it was that weird thing where, like, you'd feel, you know, you'd be on medication for a couple of weeks, you'd start feeling like good, you'd start getting a little bit fit, you'd be like, cool, I can go back up, can help some of the guys up there, they can help me out, and kind of pick up, I guess, the new pace of MMA and stuff.
Well, can I ask you, like, I suppose it's a slightly personal question, so you don't have to answer this at all. But, like, obviously, with like an 8-year hiatus from fighting, that's how you earn your living. How have you been supporting yourself during that time?
Teaching mixed martial arts and grappling.
So you've been teaching, but yeah. And has that been? I just can imagine that being quite a difficult thing to do if you're, especially like around times of surgeries and stuff. Because I mean, how? I'm imagining quite big surgery when you're talking about something like this, but yet you're still kind of teaching from the sidelines or whatever it is. You're still doing all those things.
Yeah, I mean, I got really good at descriptive teaching, if that makes sense. Because I had to.
Well, because you read all those internet pages back in the day. No one could describe like you. You spent hours in IT doing it. Yeah.
I mean, I had as well, like, when I had like my stoma in my stomach, which is like kind of a bit of your bowel sticking out, which has a pouch over it, which is kind of what you defecate into. I had like a little hard plastic shell that went over it, like a little kind of like, I guess, support that kind of kept it all in place. So even when I had my stoma, I could still kind of teach and grapple. And I mean, I still sparred and did a lot of stuff even with that.
Was that an exterior? Sorry, getting too graphic. Is that a stoma? Is that an exterior thing or is that something that's internal?
Oh, no, it's external. It sticks out your stomach.
It's external and you're sparring.
Yeah. I said, I had like a hard plastic cover over it. So I had a hard plastic cover and like, I guess, like a little belt that kind of kept that in place.
Jesus, that sounds mental to me.
Like, you just got to do it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there you go. I mean, that's... So you've got an external stoma, you call it, and a hard shell. Is that like... That's something that it comes with. That's not like... You've decided to manufacture your own thing so that you can spar.
they sell them. They do sell them. But yeah, they didn't come with it. They didn't give it to me at the hostel. It's not like they were like advising me to do any of this at the hostel.
Right.
So I brought this so I could specifically do like some type of sport or. But
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's mad combat, as well. Really. Like, most people be like, I'm not going to do much, you know, because this is, you know, it might feel uncomfortable or you feel uncomfortable about it just kind of from an emotional or mental point of view. Some people might have those kind of, inhibitions in some way or something. And you're there going, no, I'm going to buy a plastic coating for it and I'm going to spar people with it.
Yeah. You just got to get on with it. That's the thing. Every sort of said, like the majority of the time, where like it sticks onto your skin. So it's almost like a blister plaster kind of sticky thing. And every sort of thing, obviously, when it, you get hot and sweaty and stuff, it'll sometimes like start coming away, but you can kind of obviously immediately smell it. And then I'd be like, okay, like give me 5 minutes. I'll go clean it up, change the bag. So I got a new bag on. So it's again, stuck to it properly. So nothing's leaking out or coming out. And then you kind of get back to it.
I find that fascinating. I don't know why I find that so fascinating. That's madness. But again, that just showed that's the level of like, dedication from, I think, just people that do what you do for a living. That's just, and as you say, that whole attitude of just, well, yeah, you just get on with it and you just find solutions for the problems. Yeah,
you'll find a way to get back to doing what you want to do.
I just find that incredibly impressive. And I think that's something that's very special with people that are mixed martial artists, really. They just finding solutions and cracking on and staying positive and, right. And keeping that kind of mindset with it. What was the low point? Like, because I'm saying I'm putting this on you because you seem like a very positive guy. Right. You seem like someone that you say you just get on with it and you stay positive. What were the low points? Was there any moments where you were like, this might be a bit too much for me, or in terms of like trying to get your career back on track and all that?
I mean, for the positiveness, anyone can kind of be like that on that positiveness. They just need to kind of stick with it, have that kind of right mindset. Do you know what I mean? And want something bad enough to get back to. Mm. For me, I guess the only low points I really had was one of the times after my first surgery, like, as I said, like, my bowel like froze up and stopped, and I had about like 4 or 5 days of that where basically my bowel wasn't moving, nothing could go in or out really, and that was just like horrific.
Wow. You know, so you can't theoretically eat or anything?
No, basically I was full, like my body was full from the stoma site. So it was all, like I said, I had the surgery, I had a epidural in, where they give kind of pregnant women, so I couldn't feel anything from my like chest down basically. So I woke up from the surgery, felt amazing because, again, like 6 pounds of bad necrotic flesh had been taken out of me. So I was like, I feel great. This is great. They like want you to start eating and drinking again. So you start eating and drinking again. And then I think like a day in, they took the epidural out. Basically, my body realized like stuff had been done to it.
Yeah.
But where I'd eaten for like a day or two and it like stuff had been passing through all fine, when it realized stuff has happened to it, it basically froze up.
Wow.
And then that was just like the grimmest thing ever, basically. But there was a night, I think, again, like 4 days in, maybe 5 days in, it was during one of the night shifts. So like the main doctors aren't there. And again, like, as I said, I think on air, it was like, it was an odd time because it was just before Christmas. And basically the private hospital was basically shut down. So there was like no one in there, bar me, by the end of it, for like the last 2 days. Like half the hospital had been shut off. So just like areas are just dark, shut off. And there's like little areas you can kind of walk, or I'd be walking around trying to get stuff moved, basically. And so it was like that scene from like 28 Days Later, where he's just walking around the hostel, just being like in one of the hostel gowns, walking with like a little IV drip thing and just like walking. I'm shuffling. I'm not really walking at this point because I'm like, I'm not death's door, but I feel just horrific. I remember like the night before it stopped being bad, I basically was like said to the doctor on call, who's like a French nurse, just basically like do anything. Like, I'll happily have anything. Like, nothing could be worse than this at the moment. So she was like, oh, we'll basically put something in to drain it out. So what she did, she got like a tube and she put it up my nose and into my stomach to start draining stuff out. And obviously while she's doing this, I'm being sick and stuff because I'm full up to the gills anyway, or like nothing's going down. So anything's sitting in my stomach. She starts draining stuff. Nothing really happens. I remember I had this down my neck for like 45 minutes before she came back. And it's probably one of the worst nights of my life. And then in the morning, my actual surgeon came in and just went, oh, okay. Like, she probably shouldn't have gone through the nose. She should have just gone straight through the stoma. Went through the stoma, pulled out a load of stuff, and then my body just started kicking back in again. So it started working fine.
Oh,
I had to go through one horrible night. I mean, a couple of horrible days, but then one horrible night of it.
Jesus. And I tell you what, I would not have slept if I was in like a hospital that had like no one in it. I would totally be freaking out. My mind's like way too paranoid. I've watched too many like zombie movies and stuff like that. Yeah. I definitely had that
horrible
sleep
filter.
That would creep me the fuck out.
Yeah. Let alone being another patient and seeing, that's that UFC fight just wandering around there with an IV bag.
Oh, mate. Well, look, on to more positive things now. You're back. You're fighting again in, what, less than 2 weeks now, I think. It's
less than 2 weeks.
15th of October in Frankfurt, but for Octagon MMA.
Yep.
So you're not back with the UFC, but you are still contracted with the UFC. Is that right?
Yeah, so the UFC basically wanted me to get out and basically, I guess, test my level and start getting back into the swing of things. Obviously, that everyone... I mean, everyone in Octagon is actually a very high level as well. So it's not like saying too much about feeling like, oh, fight at a lower level and then kind of build yourself back up. So it's almost not in that way. But again, they were kind of didn't know how to match me in UFC wise with all the kind of big roster they got. So they said, hey, take a couple of fights out. I've got a 4-fight contract with Octagon. So I will just start getting cracking through that. And basically, I mean, the cool thing of Octagon is when you check out, they got shows all the time as well. You know, I think they've got 3, maybe 4 before the end of the year as well. So it's not like I'm going to be stuck waiting on the sidelines for a long time. I can kind of get busy and, you know, I've wasted almost 8 years. So let's go get back in and get doing stuff.
And as your body sort of recovered, and I know that you said that you're technically cured now. Is that right?
Yep. Don't have, I guess, the infected areas.
That's great. And so as you know, your body has recovered and you know, your training, and obviously to be fight fit is different levels of fitness, you know, to be achieved. As the physical side of your training has kicked in, like, tell me a little bit about the sort of the mental aspect of kind of training at that level again. And I know you said that you was, you know, in and out of shoot fights throughout your time away, but you know, when you're now pushing yourself because, you know, you've got a fight in 2 weeks' time, like sparring and things like that, like, what was the sort of mental aspect of going, well, I've had this done to my body? Like, was it ever a concern that one body shot could do this? And I know physically, I'm you know, you say that you're where you should be, but just the mental aspect of thinking, you know, if I take that one shot, could that do that? Has that ever kind of filtered through into your sort of thought process?
No, not really. Like, I guess, I mean, body shots are going to hurt regardless.
That's a very good point.
Whether you've got no stoma, normal body, or any kind of thing. I mean, like, shoot was always, I guess, good for me. When I was going up, when I say wasn't back to 100%, they were always like fairly light on me, but obviously London shoot training is always good, hard level. Everyone in there's pretty much an absolute killer and fighting on some high level show, you know. So I think being back into the mix with all the guys now, I'm kind of feeling prepared and on that level, you know.
Yeah.
This seems like hopefully the start of a second career for you almost in MMA. Flash forward a few years whenever you decide to retire. How do you want this? What's the goal? If you to look back on this second half of your career and think of it to yourself as a success, what would you like to achieve in the next few years?
I guess just have fights, enjoy them, and get winning. You know, I mean, I did MMA because I enjoyed it. I never did it to earn plenty of money or be famous or anything like that. I just like competing, and it's MMA I picked to compete in. So just ideally keep fighting and keep enjoying it. You know, when I get too old and I can't continue anymore, I'll retire. But as long as I'm still enjoying it, that's the main thing.
And so what can fight fans expect from a 2022 John Hathaway?
Hopefully a good fight. That's all I'll be looking to put on, like a good show. Looking obviously to do everything what I used to do, box, wrestle, grapple, and then do it for 15 minutes if I have to. Ideally, it'll stop before that, but 15 minutes if I have to.
Wonderful. Have you got an opponent booked yet?
Yes, I believe. I'm waiting to actually sign the contract. I'll sign the contract before saying any names. Just in case anything closes, I guess. So
when we stop the recording, you can tell us afterwards. Yeah. A little side by whilst you have been away, the British MMA scene in particular feels like it's completely exploded. We've got Bisping's become a champion. Now Leon Edwards has become a champion. We've got people like Tom Aspinall, unfortunately, obviously injured at the moment, but looked like he was on a tear in the heavyweight division. Arnold Allen as well. I know he's got Calvin Kattar coming up soon. If he wins that fight, surely he's fighting for the belt next. He would be on fight win streak or something.
His Dan Hooker match has been great. Every match he's had has been a fantastic match, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the cool thing is it's now like a UK card. It's now not just like a couple UK fighters on.
Yeah.
It's UK fighters from start to finish. And it's there's a guy at the end of it who's a UK card. Rather than like, you know, back in UK cards back in the day, I guess you'd have UK guys on it. But, you know, the main event would normally be like a foreign affair or something like that. Rather than now, it's literally start to finish, UK guys, and they're all like relevant UK guys. Do you know what I mean? Like we're talking about Arnold Allen. He's a fight away from title contention, or two fights away. Do you know what I mean? Yes, same with Tom Aspinall until he got injured. Like he was right on the cusp of doing some good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And again, I just can't wait to see it more.
Absolutely. And I think we've also seen the sort of evolution of like the superstars as well. Like, obviously, back in the day, you know, you mentioned like Hoess and people like that. They were stars of that time, but the world of MMA was far smaller. The scale of it now, post Conor, has kind of blown it up, and we've seen the UFC become something ridiculous, and obviously MMA in general, and we're seeing even like with British fighters now, like Paddy Pimblett. Pimblett is a legit superstar now. What, three fights into the UFC, and look at him. He's, you know, but
three great fights as well. It's not like a he's entertaining as hell, you know.
Wonderful. Well, look, John, we won't take up any more of your time, and we just want to thank you ever so much for coming on. It's so exciting to see like John Hathaway's name on a fight card again, and we wish you all the best on the 15th, and after that fight, we'll hit you up, and we'd love to have you back on to,
it'll be a pleasure,
to chat about how the fight went.
Awesome.
Lovely.
Thank you
Thanks so much, John.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate.
There you go, John Hathaway. What an absolutely lovely man.
Yeah. Oh, what a nice bloke. Such a nice bloke. And kind of you look at him and you hear him speak and you don't necessarily think MMA fighter. He just seems like such a nice, lovely bloke. It's not like that stereotype. But they all do. Is that what you're about to say?
I was going to say, yeah. Every time we finish these, everyone that listens to this podcast must go, they always do their outro starting with, what a lovely man. She was lovely, wasn't she? And like, and it is, it's that kind of, a lot of the trashy media kind of always puts this perception over that they are all thugs. And clearly, you know, this podcast is testament to the fact they're not.
The big stories are usually whenever the big names in MMA that aren't the nicest people start kicking off.
Playing
and, you know, like, you know, it's your Colby Covingtons and sometimes, unfortunately, your Conor McGregors and all that Masvidal and all that kind of stuff, that every now and again something happens outside the cage that, you know, helps paint that picture of MMA fighters just being thugs, which we all know that if you've been listening to this show long enough, you all know that they're not. They're an eclectic group of very intelligent, nice people, the majority of them. But before we move on to anything else, yes, absolutely. And before we say anything, we should have let you know in the chat, John's fighting in Octagon MMA, as we said, in Frankfurt on October 15th. And you can watch that fight by going on the Octagon website. I think it's Octagon with a K, not a C, octagon.tv. And you follow the stuff there and you can find the fight there. And it's Saturday the 15th. So when this goes out, it's probably this Saturday coming, I imagine. So yeah, go to octagon.tv to get that fight. And you also hear the sultry voice of friend of the show, Brian Lacey, doing some of the commentary there. So yeah.
What a beautiful voice and a beautiful man.
Right. I was having a drink there. You just enjoyed your own joke a lot, didn't you? I was
like, no, that's so pathetic.
It is,
but
really,
again,
really
thanks
bad.
Thanks to Brian for introducing us to John, and as mentioned, after the event, it'd be great to catch up with John again. And because an incredible story, and the strength of mind was something that resonated through that chat. The fact that as much as we was kind of pushing him as to like, God, it must have been bad then, and he was like, well, you know, and it was always just back at it with a positive spin. And and I guess one of the things that, you know, recording 100 or so of these episodes, what you definitely realise is that a fighter's mindset is something rare and something quite special. And
built different, aren't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, to go through that, 8 years of that, three surgeries, not being able to do the thing that you love to do, and still have that kind of positive attitude towards the future and what's going on, and that whole just kind of, well, you just kind of get on with it type attitude. The fact that he was sparring with a stoma. What? And the fact that he would get a bit sweaty and he would smell it and go, oh, give me 5 minutes and I'll come back. You're like, fucking hell, that is a level of commitment that it just surpasses what most people would do. So
absolutely.
I am fingers and toes crossed that he has a great return on the 15th of October, and just everything goes really well for him, because he seems like the type of guy you want to root for. He seems like someone that you just want good things to happen to. John Hathaway, now he's been through enough shit, let's give him some good times and hope that things work out for him.
Absolutely. Thanks ever so much for listening. As we've mentioned a moment ago, we've done over 100 episodes with the aforementioned fighters like Paddy the Baddy. He's been on twice. We've had Tom Aspinall on. We've had other kind of legendary fighters from the first half of John's career. So we spoke to your Brad Pickett, your Michael Bispins. Who else have we had from Dan Hardy?
Dan Hardy.
And we've had some great chats with people on the kind of sort of the, you know, the third person in the octagon. That chat that we had with Mark was absolutely amazing. Mark Goddard, just getting to chat to the you know, arguably in my opinion the best ref in the game.
Absolutely,
was a wonderful chat, and also we've been really blessed to have, I'd say, pound for pound champ Alexander Volkanovski on, and Tyron Woodley, Dan Hooker. We mentioned Arnold Allen on the fighters on the podcast as well. We've had them all on. So go and have a little rummage in the archives of this show, and you can go and listen to them all for free wherever you get your podcasts. And all we ask in return is that you just give us a little like, love, share, or just nudge your mate and go, there's this MMA podcast, and it's well worth a listen. And that'd be great if you could do that. And I guess all that's left to say is we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.